stop going wild. I heard they checking for me, no one checking on me, so I had to go run up a check. I got the message on me.
Bit of a different vibe from the first podcast. How you doing, everybody? This is Simon for the Closed Network Podcast. Thanks for listening. It's been a while since I've put out episode 2, and that's okay. I've been working on a lot and doing a lot of development. So I figured, what better way than to start the second podcast with what better way, right, is to have somebody else on, and someone else who happens to be my brother and happens to be like-minded in a lot of ways, different-minded in others, and that's what makes our conversations interesting and unique. But where they are similar is in this particular area of protecting your identity as much as possible, not to be anonymous, but to secure your identity using applications, technologies that are privacy respecting, and coming from a traditional, like, technical ecosystem, like a lot of us out there. So, Michael, thanks for joining me on my podcast here, my second one. So it's pretty small.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. You can call me Maverick for short.
Mav. I like it. I like it, Mav. we're huge Top Gun fans. I don't know so much as we're fans, huge Top Gun fans, as much as we are as quoting.
We're students.
Quoting,
we're students movies. Of Top Gun.
Students of Top Gun.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've watched several documentaries on the making of Top Gun.
We'll have to go see the new one if it ever. I think it's coming out next year sometime.
Yeah.
The remake.
I've been saying that for 3 years.
With the cruise.
Next year.
So yeah, thanks for coming on. It's my second show, second episode of the show, I should say. And there's been a little delay. I won't really go deep into detail, but, you know, life is busy and I'm trying to make some priority changes in my life, like I'm sure a lot of people try to do before going into the new year and into a new season.
Or right after turning 40.
Or that. Yeah, that happens. That
reevaluating life.
You kind of really start thinking about things a little bit differently. Yeah, thanks for coming on. I really, for the theme of this show, or this episode, I keep calling it a show, an episode, is really the focus on the mobile device. A little bit on computer as well, because I think that they kind of go hand in hand in sometimes, but a lot of people don't really use their mobile device and their laptop or computer in conjunction with each other in a big ecosystem like Apple users do. And I say Apple users because I am an Apple user. You were an Apple user. You still kind of use your Apple device to a degree. But what initially, I know I'm one of those evangelistic type family members that's, oh, you know, you should do this and you should do that and look into this and use a password manager and all these different things. And honestly, the two people in my family that really actually take a lot of that to heart is you, my brother, and our mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious to know so far what your expectations were, because you're using an iPhone when talking about tracking closed source applications, the trackers on you. Obviously, a lot of those are for marketing purposes, but there's a lot that are unknown, right? I'm not going to get conspiratorial necessarily, but we know that there's a lot of, you know, we'll call them, you know, nation states and those types of things that basically leverage these platforms to gather information that they don't really have a right to. So, you know, knowing that I went down this path or been going down this path for quite a long time, doing a lot of research and a lot of testing, I'm curious to know what your initial expectations were, specifically in this context, switching to a Google Pixel phone, running Graphene OS, which is a very limited ecosystem environment. Out of the box, it's built, designed to be very privacy-centric, security-focused. What were your initial expectations with leaving iOS to go?
So I first started thinking about doing this stuff right around 2000, 15, 16, but there weren't very many options at the time. We both are fans of the No Agenda show, and yep. the host has been talking about some of these strategies for a while. So in in late 2018 or early 2019, I bought a Nokia the E70?
I don't remember the model number, but I remember you telling me about it.
And my expectation was that I would have a very low-functioning device.
Right.
With a QWERTY keyboard and the ability to hotspot. So that if I wanted to use this device to run a traditional smartphone for whatever reason, I could.
Right.
But I am not much of a social media person. I get tempted by it just like everybody else, but I get real tired of it real fast. I'm kind of an analog person in a lot of ways. It's not unusual for me to look up, you know, directions on how to get somewhere before I leave and write them down before I leave the house, which is what we used to do back in the day. You know, you'd get the Thomas Guide out, you'd map your route, and then you drive and you got a list of directions and, or, you know, somebody would tell you over the phone. All the notes I take are by hand. So I didn't have much expectation because I didn't have many requirements. I needed a phone that obviously could text and call. And having a QWERTY keyboard was pretty essential because we all lived through the hell of the multifunctional keyboard.
Yeah.
And I needed something that could play music and podcasts because that's kind of how I keep my sanity. So I knew that I needed something that was going to be able to stream music or at least hold music and download music. And so with the Grapheme phone, you know, you showed it to me initially and you were really focused on a lot of the security stuff. And all I wanted to do was to be able to drop out. I wasn't really heavily invested in using a lot of the common apps and services. I just wanted a phone that I could go dark on. Mm-hmm. And mostly from that marketing perspective, mostly from the I don't want to keep generating data for free to companies that I don't trust and that I would rather not do that for, you know.
Right.
And so that was my expectation. The Grapheme phone initially was on the Pixel 3.
Right.
And it was really meeting my needs. It was running regular like podcast apps, and it was running Spotify if I wanted it to. Had a YouTube app. I watch a lot of YouTube, but I don't really need a username. You know, I don't really need a profile for most of what I do recreationally on there. And so it really did serve that purpose pretty well right out of the box. Now, due to life circumstances, I ended up switching back to the iPhone out of convenience for a while. Mm-hmm. And some of that just had to do with, you know, stuff that was very simple and probably could have been overcome. But at the time, it was just too distracting, and I went back to the iPhone. Mm-hmm. And it was a pretty smooth transition back to the iPhone, so it wasn't like a big, you know, oh, I got to undo all this stuff so I can go back to
it's a lot easier to go back to an iPhone from something where you're not tied into a cloud system.
Right.
Than it is to leave Apple or leave Google's, you know, traditional Android platform.
Going back to Apple, going back to the iPhone, after using the Grapheme, there were things about the iPhone that I didn't realize before how much I hated. And there were other things that I didn't realize how much I really missed them until I got back to them. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of what made it less of a priority to come back to Grapheme, but still left the door open to come back to Grapheme. The trigger that really pushed me over the edge to actually take it seriously and get on Grapheme in the first place was the contact tracing.
Right.
And my attitude is like I understand the government's everywhere and they're going to do what they're going to do, but the less data I can generate, the better. But my part-time side gig, small business that I run, I come in contact with a lot of strangers on a regular basis.
Right.
And the idea that we may be tracked in those interactions during COVID. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to allow myself to be tracked with all of these, you know, they said that, you know, it's only on
opt-in.
It's opt-in and everything. Sure, but sure. We know that's horseshit because for several years, Amazon's been telling us that the Alexa's not listening 100% of the time. Right. And if you think about it logically, that would be incredibly stupid of them to not have it listening 100%
Well, it wouldn't be a good business model to have a device that only listens on one activation. And the thing of it is, how does it know when it's being activated if it's not listening?
Right.
That's, I mean, just common sense. I mean, at some point, it's got to be listening to something. It
has to be processing those signals. It has to process the signals.
Right.
So you could make the argument that it's not recording, but it is processing. And if it's going to the trouble of listening and processing so it can pick up the keyword, then if I was Amazon, I'd be looking at these devices like, this is a gold mine of information we're leaving on the table.
And you're also building out a network that only you can access, essentially. I mean, and whoever else they give access to. But I'm saying is, it's not like the internet.
Right.
It's their own network of these devices.
Well, it is the internet. It's becoming the internet.
Well, it is becoming kind of slowly the internet with Sidewalk and all these other things. So
the idea that the contact tracing was opt-in only, I didn't believe that for a second. And we have not had any proof yet publicly that it was anything but opt-in. But I fully expect at some point there to be a revelation that it was
a Snowden moment or some kind of whistleblower.
Right. So,
and for context, this is this podcast is being recorded October 11th, 2021. So we've been in this kind of state of mind for, well, the better part of a, you know, almost a year and a half, year and 8 months, something.
Yeah. And the contact tracing thing came out, I believe, in September of 2020.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying about it. A little over a year, the contact tracing stuff. Right. I mean, obviously we've been in pandemic since last March of 2020, but where this context of the contact tracing specifically, the apps and the opt-in stuff. And I kind of think sometimes, well, a lot of times by the time we hear about it, it's already been implemented for quite some time.
Right.
Or if nothing else, the technology's been available, whether it's being utilized in any capacity, may or may not, we may not know, but there's a lot that's already in play. And I don't want people to think that we don't think that there isn't a virus or that there isn't something like that. The purpose of what we're talking about on this episode and in general on closed network is to close off your personal network to any entity for any reason that you don't exclusively permit.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a direct like infringement on your personal privacy and potentially your security, because if it's revealing location data and it can be compromised, then it could be used as far as OSINT information goes by someone who's looking for you, and maybe a domestic abuser from the past, an ex-girlfriend or boyfriend who's got some of the vendetta. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, there's information out there about scrubbing your metadata on your images before you put them on social media and all this other stuff. It's like, you're basically broadcasting to anyone who has access where you are, who you are with, how long you are with them, and what time, and all of that.
Right.
You
know? And I have no illusions about some level of public information. And to illustrate that, I'll just tell you, as a small business owner, one of the things that I do on a somewhat regular basis is seek out public attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking about advertising. I've been on the news. I have sent press releases. I have been interviewed, and I do have a public persona, and so you know it can seem a little contradictory to be like, no, I want my privacy, while at the same time I'm plastering my name everywhere.
Well, again, it goes back to if you're doing something because you have a purpose to do it. it's a choice that you're making versus devices and technology or subscription services that are accessing that personal information without your knowing, or okay, maybe it is buried somewhere in a user license agreement on page 900, you know, or 98 or whatever. It's I won't call it a social contract, but it's definitely a contract, especially when you're paying for a service. I'm not even talking about the free services where you kind of know it's a trade-off. You know, in this example, you were using Apple. Apple devices are arguably the most expensive devices for consumer electronics out there for communications. They are not the cheapest when it comes to their cloud services and the cost of their apps. Their whole model is a pay-to-play. It's not, hey, we're going to give it to you for free like Google's model, and in return, we're just going to harvest all your data and sell it to third parties. It's like an agreement. Like, okay, if I'm paying for something, then there's an agreement here how you're going to handle this. And I think that, you know, when you're going out into the world and you're making choices cognitively, then that's up to you. That's whatever you want to do. It's the behind the scenes when other companies are trying to backstab you.
Right. It's not just that. I am somewhat in control of that public persona. I choose what I want to share, and I share it for a specific reason. But it's not like the news team is following me around everywhere I go,
sure.
Monitoring every transaction, building data on what my habits are, monitoring my bank accounts, you know, all of that stuff. This is much more traditional public persona, which is not invasive. First of all, because you're inviting it into your life, and second of all, it just does. There's no way it's going to go to the depth that your personal devices go to,
right?
And so, I bring that up because I want people to understand that this is not about disappearing from the world.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to disappear from the world, then just don't have any of these devices. You know, go Ted Kaczynski, use a payphone in town, no electricity, no running water, no utility bills, no credit cards or anything like that. Nobody really wants to do that. I mean, one out of maybe 10 million people is ready and willing to do something like that. Most people have a life and they want to live their life. And what I wanted from my phone was for it to not interfere with my life, implementing the phone to not interfere with my life, but give me a lot more control over what I was sharing and what I was able to do. The other thing too is I do want to have private conversations.
Right.
I do want to talk to certain trusted people about things that I wouldn't want anyone to know. Besides the people I'm talking to. And I don't really need to explain why that's true. If you've ever told a secret to anybody, then you can get it. There's a million reasons why you would want to have a private conversation that you would never want a third party to get a hold of, an advertiser to get a hold of, an enemy to get a hold of, or law enforcement to get a hold of. And so my expectation would be, is there a way to have those conversations digitally and trust that they are safe between you and the person you're trusting?
And I think this topic generates a lot of questions with people like, well, what is it you have to hide?
Right? Yeah.
And
it's I'm not going to tell you because, you know what I mean? Like,
but the thing of it is it's like, why does the brain in this societal mindset, in this day and age, why does the brain immediately go to what is it you're trying to hide, fill in the blank, from the government, from the police? It's like, wait a second. Why is that insinuated at all? Maybe it's actually just their family issues, their spouse issues, their relationship issues. Not, and when I say issues, I mean conversations or topics are not anyone else's business but those two parties.
This may or may not be true for most people. I'm going to bet that it is. I'm going to bet that you would be uncomfortable showing at least one of your text conversations to a police officer.
Or even to just any third party.
Well, specifically to law enforcement, because a lot of that question is, what do you have to hide? What are you doing that's so bad that you have to hide it from the government? I say, well, let me have your phone.
And let me sit down with your wife and your kids and your brother.
A detective.
That's what I'm saying.
Let's sit down with a cop and let's get full access to all your text.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Right. What does he have or she have to mm-hmm. hide? Nothing. It's just their private conversations.
Right.
So why does it have to be insinuated that you're doing something illegal mm-hmm. or illicit or wrong or whatever, morally, ethically, whatever, right. Just because you don't want to expose, be 100% transparent?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't want to live stream your love life. I mean, mm-hmm. some people might, but you know, well, it's like,
pause. Why is it normal for people to have Nest cameras or whatever, not just in their house, but in their bedrooms?
I don't understand that. I don't get that at
all.
Are
these people just not having sex?
Right. No, I mean, seriously. And I do have a couple of security cameras that are 90% of the time unplugged. I do plug them in when we're going to be away from the home for an extended period of time.
But these aren't cloud cameras.
No, but
this is a closed network.
No, but I do have to access it from a centralized server that I have to connect to.
Okay.
So they are connected to the internet through a gateway.
Okay.
Now, they're not like this, you know, the cameras you just plug in and, you know, their IP. It is all closed within my home. But if I want to access it remotely, the way I have it set up right now, I do have to actually connect over the web.
Is this a third-party service? Or?
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not Amazon.
No.
And it's not Nest.
No. And the cameras are only outside the mm-hmm. house. Yeah. They're not indoors. So I know. And it's like, you know, you bring up this conversation in that regard. It's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to share that. Or, hey, Mr. Detective, Mrs. Detective, Miss Detective, whatever. Like, let me go ahead and just casually scroll through your photo library
mm-hmm.
and your text messages
yeah.
and your other app messages, whatever apps you're on. You know, it might be dating apps and, you know, whatever. No, that's personal. It's like, well, then why is it's considered personal? Do I have to be looked at as like I'm some sort of outcast by society because I don't want to participate in this sharing of data and information willingly when I know that A, data breaches happen every day. Things are hacked every day. And number two, it could be used for nation state purposes that I don't agree with or subscribe to, or for marketing, which I also don't want to be marketed at.
Mm-hmm.
How many spam calls do you get a week?
Oh, probably 20 to 25.
Sure. Yeah. And I'd say most people are probably around that.
Yeah.
So why is it absurd to want to limit the access to you,
mm-hmm.
to your what it is? From a marketing perspective, it's competing for your attention,
mm-hmm.
right? The more emails, phone calls, texts, and everything that are targeted towards you is taking that time out of your life that you could be dedicating to something else, like productivity, work, pleasure, hanging out with friends, having meaningful conversations. So anytime you're robbed of that, it's robbing of your life. This is a very short life cycle on this planet. And so if I can eliminate direct marketing through phone calls, email, spam, targeted ads, all these things to get my attention, get my attention, get my attention. Look over here, look over here. The more I can limit and reduce that, it's like basically recharging your life on planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If that makes sense. I know that's kind of a dumb way to explain it, but that's how I look at it.
You're reclaiming one of the few resources that's really unique to you.
It's not reproducible.
Which is your time.
Sure.
You know, your time and attention.
You can't reproduce more time. You can make more money if you lose money, right? You can find love again if love is lost, but you cannot put more time in the bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing, too, is if we had had this conversation 2 years ago from now, pre-COVID, pre-2020 election,
right,
pre-insurrection, pre all of that, some of this would be theory.
Oh, but, it would be theory. But and it would sound outlandish.
The definition of domestic terrorist is evolving by the day in this country.
Sure.
This is something that privacy-focused people have always had in the back of their minds. And since, I would say since 9/11, but really post 9/11 and the invention of the smartphone, there has been a suspicion that eventually these rules and law changes and Patriot Act and NDAA and FISA courts all would eventually be turned against the American citizen.
Sure.
And we know that they were turned against the American citizen back in 2005 mm-hmm. and 2006 when it was revealed that the government was using these domestic terror laws to spy on American citizens. Mm-hmm. Now, the American citizens they were spying on were terrorist affiliated people.
They were in right? the they were bucketed in there.
They right? were bucketed in there. You but know, a lot
it wasn't
of them,
just the it wasn't just the targets. It was everyone that was associated with
right.
them.
That's the thing. It's right. it's associations.
Right.
It's associations. So now in 2020, in 2021, if you notice, you don't hear the term alt-right anymore.
Right.
That term right. disappeared during COVID. Right? And it was replaced with...
Didn't they have to stay home with all of their, you know, mosquito-burning candles?
Yeah. So they replaced that term with white supremacist and adjacent to white supremacists.
Right.
So alt-right was defined loosely as people who were on the right-hand side of the spectrum and were flirting with white nationalists, white supremacists, you know, fringe people. Mm-hmm. And now the whole group has been turned into, if you are not pro-Biden, you could be called a white supremacist, an insurrectionist, a pro-Trumper, which is the same as saying terrorist. Mm-hmm. And if you think that's a jump, you haven't been reading the news. You haven't been listening to what they're saying. And so when we talk about privacy and your conversations, let's go back to what you just said about affiliations. Mm-hmm. Maybe you were not thinking about storming the Capitol, but maybe you had conversations with your crazy uncle who did express a desire to go storm. Now you could, in theory, be caught up in this mass net of surveillance around trying to, you know, identify these people.
And I look at it even kind of like bigger, is like the mass net of surveillance is already there. Mm-hmm. Now it's just a matter of whether or not they're going to go look at the archive on you.
Well, and they right? use the pressure mm-hmm. of that to control your thinking and your behavior.
Sure.
So there's conversations that I've had with people where it started out in an open channel and they wanted to keep talking about stuff. And I'm like, look, we're not going to continue to talk about this on an open channel. If you want to keep talking about this, you need to download Signal and we'll talk about it on Signal.
Right.
You know, and I'm not a terrorist, right?
But well, you know, you might, there's plenty of reasons to use Signal and to incorporate into an encrypted messaging in your daily life every day. You know, say you know, your spouse is at home and forgot to log into the bank account, mm-hmm. right? You don't want to send that on an SMS text. Mm-hmm. You don't want to send it in an email. You want to send it in a way that's going to be end-to-end encrypted so that no middleman can actually observe this. So just to protect yourself, mm-hmm. that's a security aspect. It's securing your financial data and access to your financial data by using that as a tool. In the context you're talking about, it's a privacy component, right? Mm-hmm. On the first podcast episode, I spoke about, a lot of times people will say privacy and security, but they're not always mutually exclusive. In this scenario, they kind of, this tool, this application, Signal specifically, can kind of solve both of these things to a degree. There may be some things that from a privacy perspective that it may still reveal, because you have to give out your real phone number in order to, for someone to communicate with you on Signal. So there's a little less privacy there, but you still have that privacy as far as people can't read the communications. Mm-hmm. And I'm like you, I think, and it's interesting because it's kind of a joke now, you know, where it's like, oh, cover your phone, you know, we don't want anybody to listen, or you know, Alexa, you know, did you unplug Alexa before you have this conversation? You know, people who have, honest to God, like really good critical thinking, thought provoked conversations in their living rooms and in the backyards at barbecues and stuff, that are talking about politics and where just socioeconomical like issues and topics. But those are conversations that they only want to remain because they don't want anyone else from the outside, like you're saying, labeling them or identifying them. That's not really how they feel, but it's a simple way to basically, it's a fascist approach to say, if you're not on my team, you're the enemy mm-hmm. and you're wrong. So it's,
and you're a criminal.
And you're a criminal. It stifles creativity. It stifles critical thinking. And it stifles pure, honest conversations with each other. I am guilty of it myself and being in mixed groups where I feel like the majority is like leaning towards a certain way. And I'm not agreeing with them, but I'm not necessarily speaking up and try, because I'm like, I don't really want to create a situation here, right? You've mm-hmm. seen those memes with like the wife telling the husband, like, you know, no talking politics at the barbecue, you know, and it's like four beers later and he's being dragged, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's like, I don't want to be that guy, that mm-hmm. person in that situation. The thing of it is that it feels like that whole world just is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So it's harder to feel.
It's a sidetrack, or this is a sidetrack. I'm gonna briefly say this, but it's a sidetrack. We don't have to go down this road. If you go and you spend enough time on primary internet social media, you go on YouTube, you go on Twitter, and you go on what's the other one I'm trying to
think of? Instagram.
Yeah,
Facebook and everything. Yeah.
It seems to me that, in fact, it's very heavily favored against what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you just look at likes and dislikes, you're looking at comments, you're looking at this stuff. And now, maybe it's biased, maybe it's not. And I know there are sections of Twitter and YouTube that I don't go to, that I don't see this. I don't see the ratios happening. But the White House YouTube channel goes into ratio hell on every single video that they drop. Mm-hmm. Every video that they release on that channel is getting ratioed probably on an average of 10 to 1 against.
Mm-hmm.
That's the White House YouTube channel. That's not like a partisan, you know, like this is right. not Fox News versus CNN.
Right.
And so I'm not going to go too deep into that, but I think that a lot of people are afraid of talking and they don't need to be.
Right.
But a physical conversation you have with a friend, a family member, or whatever, is different than a conversation you put into text, because it's easy to trace and use that at some point against you.
Right.
You know? And so I'm much more likely to have that conversation in person than I am over text message.
Sure.
But you know, I didn't have any of this in mind when I first considered starting using the graphene. My mm-hmm. focus was more on the marketing side.
Sure.
It was more on the, I just want to limit the amount of data I right. make available. I want to control this. And then also I had a goal starting from that time to follow what you were doing, which was to start implementing tools to remove your vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Your credit card numbers, your phone number, your address, your identity, all of that stuff. Every time you buy something online, do you really need to use your name, credit card number,
right.
phone number? Do you really need to do that? Because you're creating basically a permanent record every time you do that.
Every transaction. And, you know, and I think I mentioned this on the first episode, which was you shouldn't be giving your name and personal information to anyone for any reason. I said, oh, okay, law enforcement and financial institutions. And even then, sometimes maybe you don't give all of your information. It depends on the scenario, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're at the grocery store and you're in the checkout line, do you have your member card? It's like, no, I don't have one. I don't want one. Well, you're mm-hmm. not going to get the discount. So I'm not going to get the discounted price because I'm not giving you all my information. Okay, so let me give you fake information, because you're going to give me the discount regardless, because you don't really care. You're just ringing up the thing and you're doing mm-hmm. what you're told by your superiors. Fine. I'll fill out the thing. I'll give you a phone number. So funny story, real quick, sidebar. I use the same number at Safeway. When I go to the grocery store Safeway, and anyone listening to this, all like five people will probably find this humoring and may try it themselves. But
And you should.
I put in 555-555-5555, right? You know what number that actually comes out to be? Is a DoorDash account. For DoorDashers, they put that in there. I didn't know that, and I only know this because by coincidence, I was at the grocery store buying some stuff. A guy in front of me leaves, and I put in this number, all fives, right? She rings it up, and she's like, wait, DoorDash? And I was like, I'm sorry? She says, are you DoorDash? I said, nope, just me, regular guy, you know. Well, that's odd. The guy in front of you is DoorDash, and it came up the same member. And I looked at her and I was like, that's really unusual, you know. And I was expecting for her to be, you know, ask me to re-enter my phone number again or something like that. And she even made a comment to another of her colleagues, and she, you know, they were kind of befuddled, like, wait a second, like, there was an actual DoorDasher in front of you that checked out, and they used the DoorDash number, which pulled up this discount. I just randomly put in by happenstance the same number, and I get the discount, and it says DoorDash on the screen. So she was thinking, like, oh my gosh, is there a glitch in our system? I'm laughing internally because I'm thinking to myself, like, you guys have no idea what's going on. I know what's going on, right?
Yeah.
My whole point is, there's no reason to give out any personal information. If you want to get the discount, fine, go ahead. Use a Google Voice number. Download MySudo and use a MySudo number. Use any phone number. Buy a from Twilio for $1 a month, a voice over IP number. That's your number. You don't even have to have it hooked up to anything. It could be like the home phone that doesn't actually exist. It's just a number that it belongs to nobody. But you just remember that same number and everything. It's just a black hole you're creating for them.
I actually, right? Before implementing MySudo or Twilio, I would just give a phone number that was one digit off my number.
Sure.
Because it was easy to remember.
Easy to remember.
So yeah. I would go to Harbor Freight.
And I just felt bad because I know that's someone's number out there. But you're right. I mean, you could definitely do that.
Yeah. So every time I go to Harbor Freight, I give them the phone number, and they always ask me, are you Margaret? And I say, yes. Okay. Like, yeah.
I love it.
Give it. They're like, obviously, you're not Margaret, but whatever. Sure. I don't care. I'm just a cashier.
Right. They don't care.
That's another thing, is a lot of people you think care, don't care.
They don't care.
And you can fly under the radar pretty easily if you just have the balls or the gumption to just be like, no, I'm not participating in the way that I'm expected to. I'm going to do it a different way.
It's kind of a social dissonance to a degree, not against like a particular entity, but just kind of the overarching corporate overreach. Mm-hmm. I'll call it. Every single store, just about, you go to, it wants to track you.
Mm-hmm.
And it wants to track you by that membership card, which is tied to a barcode, which is tied to your identity, your address, your name, your phone number,
email. I run a small business, and I want more data on my customers.
Sure.
And you run a small business.
Right.
And you deal in data.
Big time.
Yep. You understand the value.
Sure, absolutely.
These stores would be stupid to not try to get this information.
Oh, no, and I don't fault them for it, right? I'm not here to ridicule the process.
But when you think about it, in the context of would they do it or would they not do it, they would be stupid not to do it. So you can assume that not only are they going to do it, but they're going to actually be doing it a lot better than you think they're doing it. And
much better. And they have been for a long time.
Right.
Target, to name one of them.
And that data is so valuable.
Right.
Think of just some of your habits when it comes to commerce. Things you do on a regular basis. And think about how much data you could get from that. You know, how many times you go to the gas station a week, which gas stations you go to, how far away from home are you going to the gas stations, what are you buying while you're there, what do you buy at the grocery store, what time of the month, what liquor stores do you shop at? Are you shopping at the liquor store the first of the month when you have more money? Are you shopping late in the month when you're like, I've done a good job and I can afford to spend? You know, like, all these things go into these very complex dossiers on you as a consumer. And as that information becomes more and more available, your whole life is being sold, bought and sold on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And if you think that you're immune to marketing, you don't understand marketing.
Mm-hmm.
If you think you're immune to manipulation, hypnotization, you don't understand.
There's a reason why most marketing firms, and I know because I've worked in them, I've built them, I know a lot about them, is we're always looking for, basically, we're hiring psychologists and hiring interns to do surveys. So I'll give you an example. A lot of these surveys are in person, to get a pulse about an idea before it ever even becomes anything that's developed, a beta, alpha, beta, whatever. Going to baseball games. Hey, would you take 2 minutes and answer 10 questions for me? And you know what? We're going to give you a free a t-shirt for the the team that's playing. Oh, sure. Yeah, great. Yeah, no problem. Sure. It's all market research. I mean, it's kind of focus groups, but unlike a ad hoc way. And that is just being done on a much more sophisticated level because everyone has a device in their hand, in their pocket, possibly on their wrist at this point, glasses now, video game connection. Everything is always connected. It's associated to a profile, to an identity, and it's developing what you're just talking about, the patterns, so that they can position the right advertiser in front of you at the right time and increase that conversion rate as much as possible.
Right. There's another element to this too, which is like, I am a consumer. I consume. I buy things that I need. I buy things that I want. I'm not necessarily opposed to being advertised to and having the right product at the right time placed in front of me. But it's not all great stuff. You know, it's not all nailing it 100% of the time. And once that information leaves, I have no control over it anymore. It could be used for many, many, many different things. And you pay attention to enough data hacks and you realize it's not just advertisers who want this information.
Right.
It's bad guys too. And if that information's out there and you don't control it anymore, it's gone, you know? So I appreciate a good ad. I appreciate a good product. I appreciate a well-placed marketing campaign that actually fulfills a desire and again, or a need.
I love marketing. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, why I like it is because it's, you're trying, I mean, all again, like I said earlier, marketing is competing for attention.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to have some kind of creative, whether it's an image, a video, or text, and the fonts and that are used and everything to harness attention from somebody for a moment and hopefully longer to compel them to feel something. And I think that it's an art. I truly think that that aspect of advertising is an art because it's just like music. Music is generally, it's from the artist's perspective, it's some sort of emotion, it's a thought, and it's they're putting it out there to compel you to feel something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that marketing does achieve that, and it can do a really good job. Where I start to kind of push back is, as well, we don't really know. We know that you like this, but it's like, we're not really actually going to come up with any, we're eventually going to come up with the right marketing for you, but we need to know everything about you first.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're really trying to do is maximize that conversion rate. And I applaud them for the effort. I mean, this is just the world we live in. This is how things are done. From a consumer standpoint, I just want to limit how much information I'm actually freely giving them and allowing
and
them
how
to
much,
have.
And how much of that marketing you're exposing yourself to as well.
Sure.
You know, so it's a complex issue.
Well, because like you, I mean, we're all consumers. Mm-hmm. I have to buy things. Mm-hmm. I have to buy certain foods. And I'm going to gravitate to a specific brand based upon marketing, or at least, and it may not even be marketing from an advert I had seen. It may be the packaging, right at that moment.
It's funny. I started going to the Art of Manliness website a little while ago. Just I kind of like going there once in a while and just seeing what they got there, and you know, you can. It's interesting blog reading if you got some time, you know. And I started getting these ads for these. You know, these boxes that they send you,
right,
the monthly subscription boxes and everything. And the stuff that there was in this box, you know, was like super cool stuff.
Right.
And it was
I need a throwing axe.
Yeah.
You know,
it was right up the alley of the Art of Manliness. And I started looking and I was like, you know, I wonder if I could break off $30 a month to buy one, you know, just try it out and everything. Then I realized, I was like, wait a minute.
They got you.
They got me.
Yeah. Well played.
Well played.
And you're self-aware,
right?
And you're being compelled, mm-hmm. right? You're to, I don't know. That's kind of dumb.
Well, and also, like, I've spent the last at least 10 years of my life throwing shit away.
Right. While acquiring more.
Well, yeah, you know. I'm acquiring more. I'm acquiring.
You're trying to be more conscious about
it. Right. I'm acquiring less over time. I'm spending more on the things that I acquire, and I'm trying to acquire less things so that what I buy doesn't break, but I buy less things. Mm-hmm. And when I go in my room, I'm looking around for things I can throw away. Do I need this? No, I don't need this.
Throw away or donate?
Mostly throw away, because it's funny. Actually, the idea of donating something slows down the throwing away process, and I'm less likely to actually get rid of it.
Hmm.
So
you should have like some sort of like closed bin. It's black, and it just goes in there, mm-hmm. and then at some point, you don't look at it. You just drop it off at Goodwill.
What it would have to have a lock on it. Because otherwise I would go looking.
Go back in there looking for it.
Yeah. And so all of this kind of goes into the decision of like, what am I willing to put up with in order to have a functional smartphone that doesn't do everything maybe that I want it to, but does do everything I need it to. However, some of the things that I need it to do, I do need to engage a little bit more, learn a little bit more,
right.
Put in a little bit more effort and be willing to put up with something not working as smoothly as an Apple product does.
Right.
And luckily I've got you to help me with that. Because some of that stuff, it's like, I'm not an idiot, but I'm not passionate about some of these things.
Right.
And I would never spend the time to deep dive into them.
Right.
But if I had, you know, like we were talking about earlier, if I had a YouTube video series that said, here's how you do everything you need to do to get this phone running. So here's how you download the OS. Here's how you load it onto the, you know, here's how you jailbreak the phone. Here's how you load it onto the phone. Here's how you configure initially. Here's what this does. This doesn't. You're going to need to know this because when you start downloading apps, you need to know this. Mm-hmm. And here's where you find your apps. And, you know, if anything goes wrong, look here first.
Right.
And that would deal with about 95% of what goes on with that phone.
Right.
That would be completely worth it to me to have that. And it's funny, I sit there in my, you know, when I'm dealing with my customers and we're talking about phones spying on you and everything. And I don't even tell people that my phone doesn't do that stuff.
Right.
I don't tell them I have a graphene phone. I don't tell, because I don't really want to talk about it.
You don't want to get into it. You don't want to be the focal point. But, you know, part of this for me and why I'm doing this podcast and why I had you on is because mm-hmm. I know you're not, and I want to start, it's not going to happen overnight, but over some time, put out some resources to do exactly that. And in those situations, you can tell them, hey, you don't have to live your life that way.
Mm-hmm.
There are options. I'm not the expert, but go to this resource to take a look at what your options are. If someone truly wants to do it, it's not that hard mm-hmm. anymore. It's been kind of a pain in the butt up until recently. And when I say recently, I'm in the last year or so
mm-hmm.
with the scripts that run that basically do everything for you. I mean, you still have to unlock, you have to have an unlocked phone. You still mm-hmm. have to, you know, do a couple commands, but it's pretty easy. So Graphene OS, again, for those who are listening and made it this far, is a de-Googled ROM. It is a Android in itself. The core is open source, and they utilize the open source code and build a ROM that respects privacy and security on the device. The builds right now, when I say the builds, these ROMs are only able to run on Google Pixel phones because, ironically enough, they're made to be the most secure in the sense where if someone were to try to access the phone or root the phone, it'll have to erase itself mm-hmm. to unlock the bootloader.
Right.
And that's the security aspect.
That's the physical security.
That's the physical security. Yeah. And that's why the Pixel phones are the ones that are only that these ROMs run on. Fortunately, Pixels have been around for a long time and they've just released the 6. So of a Pixel 3, heck, even a Pixel 4 is about $240.
Yeah.
The Pixel 5s are still probably in the 500 to 600 range, but they'll come down and the Pixel 6s are out. So, and I personally use a Google Pixel 4 XL. I also have a Google Pixel 5, and I have several 3s. I run Graphene OS, and as of lately, I've also been experimenting with Calyx OS, which is another privacy security distribution. I'll call it a distribution, similar to Graphene OS, but it has some other features that kind of make things a little bit easier to get by on for notifications and installing apps like, say, Uber or something. There's maybe a couple apps you have to have. And I'll be kind of putting out more resources on the website, which is closednetwork.com, no O, just closed, N-T-W-R-K. So getting back to the phone experience, though, so you were running Graphene, kind of digging it, went back to the iPhone because there was definitely, and I think that this is a normal path for just about anyone that's kind of trying this out and trying kind of seeing how it fits. And then at a certain point, you went back to Graphene OS full time. I'd say you've probably been running it like exclusively about the last 6 months as your primary, only day, everyday driver.
Yeah, my iPhone bricked itself,
which is kind of a weird thing.
I mean, yeah, that doesn't happen all that often anymore, but it was completely and 100% bricked. I didn't take it to Apple because I'm not like, that's not my first instinct.
Right.
But I tried everything I could to get it working again. And I was like, I need a phone. I still had the Graphene phone. I fired it up and went back to using it. And so it's been full time now for approximately 6 months. There is one small issue that is Verizon related.
Right.
And it just so happens that it coincides with some life events on my end that just, I can't use Wi-Fi calling. And there's times where I absolutely must have Wi-Fi calling.
Right.
So the workaround was to fire up a spare Google Pixel 3, just running the Android system, not logged into anything.
Yeah, you know, just not, to be able to use it as a phone.
Just to use it as a phone. But I'm getting away from that, and I won't have that problem here very soon. And so really, at this point, once that small issue is taken care of, there's nothing that this phone can't do that I need it to do.
Right.
I run Outlook on it to run my, you know, my email clients, so I don't have
to. And that sounds like counterintuitive that you would run a Microsoft app on the phone, but
thanks Bill Gates.
But here's the thing, the Outlook app running on Graphene OS or Calyx OS actually works really well if you need to be connected to Google accounts, like not just Gmail, but Google Apps business accounts or Exchange accounts. They work great with both. You're able to monitor what it's sending. It's not phoning home to Microsoft because there's no Firebase running on the phone. There's no Micro G even running on the phone. You're just utilizing the app because it has what it needs to be able to connect to Exchange and Google Apps or Gmail. It also has a global calendar, which might be really important to those because there are some really good open source email applications like K9 Mail and stuff. And most of them do work with Google. The downside is they don't have any calendaring. So if you have like multiple calendars you need to view and stuff, it just works really well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not promoting, you know, Microsoft products or anything, but sometimes it just works.
Well, I mean, we're working on a Google phone.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So thank you, Satan, for the hardware.
Thank you, Satan.
Yeah. Thanks for the hardware, Satan. Yeah. We're going to go ahead and run this pirate radio off of it.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that as far as I'm concerned. It's not hypocritical as long as you understand what it's really doing and what it's not doing. And
right.
If you know that it's not phoning home, you know it's not reporting and sharing and otherwise tracking what you're doing. Who cares what the name is?
Yeah.
Does it work? You know,
does it work?
So that, there's a few other things I use on there. The only real app that I use on there that's not some kind of hijacked, pirate version is the Spotify app.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I don't care. I will use the Spotify app. Now, it's not sharing location.
No, it might be sending some telemetry, like, you know, because you're logging into an account, so it knows that your account's accessing it, and what they're looking at is, you know, what genres you're listening to, what you're listening to, when, and sure. But that's telemetry data that you're okay with because it's the trade-off is worth it to you.
Right.
The key here is like you said earlier, is not to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
It's to just take back control of what you're willing to give out in exchange for what you're getting.
Yeah. The other thing that that hurt to get rid of was the compatibility of the iPhone with my MacBook.
Right.
For iMessage, for cloud storage, for
AirDrop.
AirDrop.
Yeah, right.
Just file sharing back and forth. My laptop itself is end of life. It's it's almost 10 years old, this MacBook, and it's starting to suffer because it can't update some of the apps. And so I was considering buying a MacBook Air, and I may still end up buying a MacBook Air at some point. I'm not ruling it out. But we had a spare HP laptop that was relatively current, relatively new. And the Linux operating systems are getting much better.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went ahead and fired it up. You showed me how to do it. And everything that I wanted from having the compatibility of my phone and my computer is available between either having an Android device or running the Graphene OS with this Linux operating system. I can even do something with this that I can't do with an iPhone and a MacBook, which is from my phone, I can control my mouse and my keyboard on my computer.
Right.
And I'm not that I don't know why I would need that, but it was interesting to me that that was an option.
Yeah. There's some really cool open, and most of all of these tools, with the exception of the Outlook and Spotify, most of the tools and applications are all open source, which means the code is viewable. And it's most cases it's vetted. These are pretty popular operating systems, and you know, the apps within the ecosystem that come pre-installed are checked for integrity and patched pretty quickly if there's a flaw or some kind of a bug or security vulnerability. So, you know, there's no 100% guarantees in life. Mm-hmm. It's just that if you can make yourself a really tiny ball and be the smallest target, you know, while other people are kind of,
you know, and another thing is like, is being willing to be conscientious about what you're doing. You know, like I like MacBooks. I love them.
Sure. The hardware is incredible.
The hardware is awesome. The applications are awesome. Everything works really well, but you know, a lot of that hardware is wasted on bloated applications that you don't really need if you understood what you were really doing. And there's, you know, there's ways around it. For instance, on the Graphene phone, I don't need to run a bunch of apps. A lot of things I can do, I can just run off the web app.
Right.
Right. So I can just save that shortcut. It acts like the app while I'm in it. It's just a web browser. And I do a lot of things through web browsers that, you know, you kind of have it in your head that you need the software for.
Right. Oh, I need to access, you know, Twitter. Right. You got to download the Twitter app.
Right.
No, you don't. You could just use the mobile. These mobile responsive web apps are so good that most people, if you were to open up Twitter in a browser on a mobile device and open up the Twitter app and just put them down side by side, they wouldn't tell you. They couldn't tell you which one's which.
Right. And so with the laptop, now this is not true for everybody. You are having a hard time giving up the Mac because you use you know, Final Cut Pro, Lightroom, and I'm not using that stuff. So I don't need a super powerful machine running native software that's optimized for the machine.
Right.
I just need to cut and paste, to be able to crop, to be able to, you know, use a web app like Canva to do some light editing and whatever. So even though the idea of having a new MacBook Air and how slick and awesome and fast and powerful it is, if I really think about it, I don't really need any of that stuff.
Or maybe save yourself a ton of money and not subscribe, opting back into the... If I didn't have to do multimedia stuff, I want to say have to, I mean, that's part of my job, doing video editing, photo editing, and not just the tools, but I'm collaborating with others online and sending them files that need to be easily open and things like that. Can I do a lot of that on Linux? Yes, and I have. I'm a huge Linux advocate. I've been using Linux since 2001, and I love it. And I think it's, But I also know it's not for everybody. And this podcast episode isn't to try to convince people to switch to Linux or get rid of their iPhone and switch to a Pixel with Graphene OS. The point is it's a lifestyle philosophy of saying, even if you are using an iPhone, think about that app before you download it. Mm-hmm. Think about your information before you give it to that checkout clerk. Think about how you're using your information, like what phone numbers you're giving out and email addresses. Like, compartmentalize yourself out. If you're buying stuff online, use privacy.com. If you think that it might be kind of sketchy, or not even if it's sketchy, just if you don't want that transaction tracked. Or, by the way, I'm not affiliated with any of these things. I mean, these are just a guy. This is just stuff that I use. Use a password manager. I suggest using either KeePass, which is storing it locally on the device, or Bitwarden, which will allow you to use it from multiple devices. You can run your own Bitwarden server. It's open source. Will you do it? I don't know. Maybe you might. Maybe you buy a Raspberry Pi and host it yourself and put it in your home. Maybe you set up a server in your home for your own cloud services running Nextcloud or something similar. It does take a lot of work. It's a lifestyle choice. It's a philosophy of how you use your technology, your digital life online, and how you own that data. I'm not expecting everyone to go as far as like we might go or I might go. But like you said, being conscientious about the decisions you're making, this is not to ridicule what you're using. It's more about being mindful about what you're giving, what you're giving up.
So my side business is in the gun industry,
right?
And specifically in the training industry, and I'm dealing with a lot of new gun owners or people who are new to concealed carrying, and you know, they want to get involved, but if they really knew what they were asking for, a lot of them would just be like, yeah, you know what? It's not worth it.
Right.
Because it is a lifestyle change, and you have to be conscientious. You have to pay attention. You have to take this stuff seriously if you are at all concerned about your safety and security.
And that's much more like impactful to their life and other people's life versus, you know, your technology devices and stuff.
Yeah,
and it's about a mentality.
It's a mentality.
Right.
It's a mentality that you implement, because there's times where your safety may be in jeopardy, where you don't have that one specific tool, but you have to be able to think through that scenario or that actual situation with that same mentality that you've been developing.
Right.
You don't just wake up one day and all of a sudden you're a master at situational awareness. You understand the legal implications of the use of force. You understand what the gun is likely to do and what you're likely to do. Ballistics, bad guy behavior, all of that. You don't just wake up one day with this knowledge just because you decided to start carrying a gun.
Right.
You develop this over time. And you develop it to the level that you take it seriously. And so, yes, you could go on as a mindless drone and just keep doing what you're doing. And that's your choice. That's fine. But
if you're listening to this podcast or podcast like this or watching YouTube videos on these topics, you're not a mindless drone.
Right.
You may not know what to do.
Right.
Or you know, where to start, but you're not a mindless drone. Because if you are, then you wouldn't be listening to this.
So, if you're all interested in this, where would people start with thinking about the graphene?
Sure. So I'm working on putting those resources together. And when I say resources, it's either content that I'm creating myself, or there are some great people out there who are putting a lot of this content together in the form of either a YouTube channel or a podcast, or books. Some of them go really deep. Some of them are kind of higher level. So I'm going to be collecting all of those resources and putting them on the website, which is just closednetwork.com, no O, just NTWRK. Basically, that's my starting point. There is a contact page there as well. If you have a specific question or you want to reach out, please feel free to do so. I will also be setting up, not ready for this episode, but definitely by the next episode, I will have a phone number available that people can call and leave a question. That's going to be intended to be used on the podcast. So if you're going to call and leave a voicemail there, just know you don't have to give your name or anything, and your number is not going
to
be revealed.
No, they have to give their name, their phone number, their social security number.
Matter of fact, if you do, it better be fake. It should all be fake information. But yeah, I can play those questions on the podcast and kind of use those to help address, because sometimes I go down these rabbit holes and I'm pretty far deep down, and I kind of I'm further down this journey than where I was in the beginning. So I'm not always aware of the questions that might be very obvious, and they're not at all. So yeah, I'll have that ready for the next episode for sure. And I think I'm going to try to, I'm not going to say what the schedule is, but we're working on a schedule and being much more consistent. And I will try to have more details on that by the next episode. So I kind of like this a little bit more free form. This is only episode number 2. The first one was really just an introduction and a kind of a mind dump of why I wanted to do this. I want to do videos. They'll be done in a way that kind of helps protect, you know, identities and stuff. Not that it's super secret or anything. It's just, it's all in the, you know, kind of spirit of trying to help other people do the same thing. And I have no real issues with, you know, divulging, you know, identity and stuff. I mean, my name's on the podcast, but I want to find ways that are easy, or I want to create content that's easy for people to consume and try to do it themselves. We will also be selling Graphene OS and Calyx OS pre-installed Google Pixel phones on the website. I'm still working out the details because I want to make sure the whole point is to not really do it as a big profit center. Obviously, there will be some profit made from it, but very little that will be going back into reinvesting into buying more hardware and equipment and whatever else for the podcast and the videos. You know, it requires cameras and stuff and whatever. But you know, the idea is that make it easy for people to get these devices if they're not comfortable with trying to like download software and install it and root the phone and, you know, unlock the bootloader and all that kind of thing. I can crank those things out pretty quick. So I will come up with some way of doing that where also maybe you can pay online using a credit card if you want to. You should be using a privacy.com credit card number or paying in a cryptocurrency, something of that nature. I'd like to have that open so people can also, you know, purchase this stuff without revealing their identity. So those are kind of my objectives, is to really be an advocate and also do a lot of research so that research is kind of processed and then redistributed in a way that I think is a little bit easier to understand. And even sometimes then I'm probably not hitting the mark always, but that's my goal. So
awesome.
Yeah. So you're on your journey, you're running
with my busted ass phone. Yeah,
you got a nice big crack in the screen there. That's kind of,
I somehow,
amazing,
you know, cause never,
it's in a case. So
I never learned how to take that part seriously.
Right. You know. The screen.
Taking care of the screen.
I don't think I've ever known you to not have a cracked phone. And I don't think I've ever had a cracked phone that I didn't get fixed immediately.
There's a lesson in there somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks for listening. Thanks for being on the show, Michael. This is awesome. I look forward to having you on more in the future, especially checking in with your kind of your journey. You know, I call it a journey because this isn't something that happens overnight in a week, in a month. You didn't get to where you are in that time frame. You've been using Google and all these other tools and services for probably better part of a decade or two. So it's a journey because it can be fun. It's fun to learn and it's fun to find ways to do things that circumvent the system. When I say the system, it's just like what everyone else is using. And I think there's just something neat about that.
Yeah, it is, you know? Fun. It is fun when I pull out my phone and somebody's like looking at like, what is that? And I'm like, oh, I can't tell you.
Right.
Like, I'm not.
It's like a secret phone. Secret. You know, underground, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I appreciate you having me on. I look forward to doing more of these as you progress and go further. And I wish you good luck in this. I think it's awesome.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. And for everyone, thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next one. Out. Setting the stage, you should give me my props. You ain't got no soul, you lacking the spirit. You talk out your neck, I'ma show you I'm with it. I've been really happy you to sit and watch me win again and win again and win again. I know it's probably getting on me and when I'm sending them, so if I ever win again.